Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this episode of the Pigskin Dispatches Early Pro Football Team Series, we feature the Providence Steamrollers. They're our Early Pro Football Team of the Week. Learn more about this team and its origin and history with our podcast and posts coming up for you in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we return to the beginning of the week of our early pro football team series. And today, the story of the beginnings of the Providence Steamroller has a common theme to many other teams of pro football. According to the Sports and History website, the team started off in 1916 as a semi-professional team. The team was founded by Charles Coppin, and the first general manager of the squad, Pierce Johnson. We'll tell you a little bit more about those two guys in just a second. The team also was owned by a trio of interesting men, Coppin, of course, and then James Dooley and Peter Lodotti. And we're going to tell you about all these folks here. Now, Coppin, first of all, was an American journalist who at the time made his name as being the sports editor of the Providence Journal. His interest in sports was not just journalism and owning football teams, as he was also a baseball executive, and who in 1914, he was the president of a minor league baseball league called the Colonial League. Now, we go to Pierce Johnson, and he was said that he managed a team right from the offset, like we said earlier, and he worked with Coppin as a part-time editor at the Providence Journal. This man had his involvement with the franchise for all 18 seasons of its existence. And interestingly enough, Pierce also managed a minor league version of the Providence Steamroller in the American Association in the 1940s, and in later years he became a football historian for the Pro Football Research Association. Yeah, he was a fellow PFRA member in his later years. What an interesting gentleman he must have been. James Dooley, he was a judge in the state's 8th Circuit Court and is a Rhode Island state sports legend, not only for his football investment in the Steamroller, but he also is known to have founded a hockey league team, the Providence Reds of the CAHL. And Judge Dooley once also served as the president of the Upstart Hockey Association as well. He also had involvement with horse racing in the state. And our final gentleman, Peter Lodotti, the third owner, was a big-time sports promoter of the region. He was a major real estate developer of the area, as well as a man responsible for building the Cyclodrome in Providence, a venue where the Steamroller would play its home games. More about that in a second. Lodotti promoted other sporting venues as well. In addition to the Cyclodrome, he built Providence's Kinsley Park, home of the Providence Grays baseball team in the 1930s, and was instrumental in bringing the New York Yankees, featuring Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig, to play an exhibition game at that Kinsley Park. We're going to talk about Kinsley a little bit too here in a second. So remember that. We got Lodotti, we have Dooley, and we have Coppin. Those are the owners. Pierce Johnson, he was not an owner, but he was the general manager of the team that those three owners had counted on to run the team during it. Now, the Cyclodrome, as the name alludes to, was primarily built as a 10,000-seat bicycle racing stadium. It featured a wooden racetrack circling an open infield area where they placed a football field. This setup, unfortunately, ran through what would normally be the end zones. It wasn't quite long enough to suit a football field. This forced some imagination for the whole setup of the football field inside the cyclodrome track, because the end zones could only be 5 yards deep instead of the standard 10, and they cut off some of that. So the wasn't really, by today's standards, would play in that, because it would not be a legal football field and would be very unsafe. Imagine that, having 5 yards deep, somebody throwing a pass in the end zone and, you know, get whacked into a wooden track that was going through there. Now, Lodotti and the team made money by charging gridiron spectators $1 to $2 for game tickets. And as an alternative, those who couldn't attend the game in person, because remember, there's only 10,000 seats in that stadium, well, they were able to pay 50 cents to hear the game announced at theaters and parks through the latest radio technologies of the day. Now, here's an excerpt about that from the American Football Database of fandom.com. By 1919, the team was drawing in more spectators than Brown University by a margin of 2-1 due to newspaper reports at the time. However, it seemed unlikely, since the steamroller crowd was on average of 3,000 spectators per game. The players' wages were lower than those of the Indiana and Ohio football teams, so it was harder for the steamroller to begin in bringing in ringers. Several college players did play for the steamroller, but under aliases so as not to jeopardize their amateur status. That happened a lot around the country, as you can see from some of our other stories. In 1924, Providence's schedule featured several NFL teams. The Steamroller posted a 3-2-1 record against those teams, defeating the Rochester Jeffersons 3-0, Minneapolis Marines 49-0, and the Dayton Triangles 10-7. Both of their two losses came against the Frankfurt Yellow Jackets. First, there was a 21-10 loss and a 16-3 loss that shortly followed thereafter. The team also posted a scoreless tie against the Columbus Tigers. The 1924 Steamroller then went on to win the mythical undisputed championship of the Northeast. The team's success that season was enough to make the Steamroller management and its fans start thinking about playing in the NFL, unquote from the American Football Database. We thank them for that. There is little recorded about the team in the early years, but we do know that they had a milestone moment in 1925 when the Steamroller team joined the NFL as a franchise. Soon after that, they hired some big-name players to help them compete in the league. Jimmy Konzelman, we've talked about him before. He was signed for $292 per game in his contract to be the player coach, and eventually even George Wildcat Wilson from the University of Washington was hired on from another team. These salaries and other payables always put pressure on the team's finances. Cost-cutting measures, such as some of the team living with Pierce Johnson and his mother's, while others were fed meals by Lodotti's wife, were done to make ends meet. The players were also given just one jersey at the beginning of the season and asked to keep it in good order for the whole season. A pretty rough game to try to keep one jersey going. Times were tough, but they were about to be worth the effort just a few years later. So that's 1925. They joined the NFL. The 1928 season was the pinnacle of the franchise's existence. It started off by defeating Red Grange and those New York Yankees 20-7 in the opener. But in their second game, they fell in a close one, 10-6, to the Frankfurt Yellow Jackets. The Steamroller then went on a tear, reeling off 4 straight victories over the Dayton Triangles, the Yankees once again, Pottsville Maroons, and the Detroit Wolverines, all in succession. Next was a rematch with the Yellow Jackets of Frankfurt at Frankfurt Stadium, in which the game ended in a scoreless tie. A third contest the following week against these two powerhouses saw Providence win at home over the Yellow Jackets 6-0 to avenge their only loss, and the team continued on with victories over the New York Giants, Pottsville again, and a season finale 7-all tie with the Green Bay Packers. The American Football Database article goes on to say, despite the Yellow Jackets winning 3 more games than the Steamroller and posting an 11-3-2 record, Providence was awarded the title due to having the better winning percentage. Remember, the NFL championship game was not for another 5 or 6 seasons after that. They would give the hit title to the team with the best winning percentage record of league games. Sometimes non-league games would count in there too. But I think at this point they were counting pretty much league games. And 11-3-2 versus 8-1-1, I believe, much better record for Providence. They were the champions. We have a picture of their championship banner of 1928 on the banner of our article today on Pigskin Dispatch for this great article on the Providence Steamrollers. So make sure you check that out. That is, banner was found at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, where I got to visit a few times this year, and got a great picture there that they preserved. There's some great history there. Well, the team celebrated this championship, according to multiple reports, at the Biltmore Hotel in Providence, with some reported 200 fans at a victory banquet. Konzelman received the MVP trophy, and a total of five team members earned all NFL honors that year. Wildcat Wilson and Clyde Smith were named to the first team, while Curly Oden, Milt Rehnquist, and Gus Sonnenberg were placed on the second team. The next year was filled with obstacles, including, you know, Gus Sonnenberg got into some wrestling, and he ended up winning a championship in wrestling, and so he stopped playing football to focus on that. Also, the Great Depression hit. It just devastated the franchise's attendance because people just didn't have money to go to games, watch football. And payroll, it was hurt, and eventually its winning percentage of the whole franchise was hurt as players left for other pursuits to try to make ends meet during this troubling times. Eventually, having trouble fielding competitive teams and making ends meet, the franchise folded and was given back to the NFL in 1933, and it was not replaced. Sometimes the NFL would send it out to new ownership and to a different city. Not in this case. So there's some pretty interesting milestones that the Steamroller accomplished. They were the first to play four NFL games in a six-day period. Now, really trying to imagine that today if NFL players were asked to play four games in 6 days. Crazy. And it was a rougher game, I think, back then, too. The NFL team, they were the first NFL team to play in a bicycle stadium. We talked about the Cyclodrome. They were the first team to host and play in a night game November 6, 1929. And that was at Kinsley Park. It was supposed to be at the Cyclodrome, and rain sort of flooded the field at the Cyclodrome. We cover that in our November 6 football history headlines. So it was moved to Kinsley Park. And you know, Mr. Lodotti, he didn't mind that because he owned both of those parks. So it was very easy for him to change venues of that. They were also the first team in New England to take home an NFL title. Very interesting there. It was years later for the Patriots to win that. And they also have the dubious distinction of being the last now-defunct team to have won an NFL championship. So everybody else that's won an NFL championship since is still in existence in one way or another. They've been, you know, either changed cities or changed team names or something to that effect, that they still are in existence. But, you know, the Steamroller went totally defunct in 1933, never recovered and turned into another team. Well, that's our early pro football team of the week. The Providence Steamroller won a championship, an NFL championship, 1928. A very good team with some very good players, and having five all-pro, all-NFL pros and a league MVP on the same team. Just tremendous for that club in 1928. And, you know, we got to hand it to them. That is some great history, and we appreciate you joining us to learn about this great football team. We're going to have more coming up and more. And we have a little bit of a change to the way we're going to be bringing our daily football podcast to you. We've been doing the football history headlines. Those will continue, but they're going to be on the web pages. You can look at the old podcasts of the football history headlines. You could go and click on them on our website, pigskindispatch.com, for each day. If you get our newsletter, it's very easy to do. Sign up for your email subscription. Check the show notes out of this podcast in any of our podcasts, or you can go to pigskindispatch.com or jerseydispatch.com, and you'll find out what's going on in those two websites, as well as any podcasts that are coming out from those two websites. And we also will give you any news on Orville Mulligan, where we are co-producers on that great audio drama. And we'll also let you know what's going on at Sports History Network, where, you know, we have like 27 different podcasts on sports history coming out in there, including our podcasts under the Pigskin Sports banner. And, you know, we're very happy to talk with them about sports history. And you know, these guys are, we have some really great, talented hosts, and they bring in some very interesting guests on sports history of all kinds, all genres, or from around the world. I think you'll get a big kick out of that. It's fun for the whole family. You have hundreds upon hundreds of hours, literally, of great podcasts to learn. And it's evergreen. It's always good to listen to. It never goes out of style for some great sports history. But our change is going to be, we're going to try to bring you some stories and tidbits and information and tell you of different things and still have a daily podcast. It just won't be that football history format, football history headlines format that you're used to each and every day. Can bring you a little bit something here and there, give you some teas, but you can always go to the football history headlines, listening to the past podcasts on there. They are still archived on the daily podcast that come out each and every day. Like we said, the newsletter will bring it straight to you. So we appreciate your listening. We appreciate your patronage. We appreciate your feedback. PigskinDispatch@gmail.com. Until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.